You came back on leave. How were you received at home?
Well, my first job was to to ring up the... I put the money in the box. I had no English money to put in the box. I don't know how I came in. Oh, I must have had to change my French francs or Belgian francs or whatever they were. I probably had to change them into English money somewhere. Anyway, I'd done all that. Probably at Cali or whatever. But I probably had no change, small change for the... I would have English money, but no small for the telephone. Never thought about that. So went down, stayed the night in London, because I rang her up and said that I would come down to Petworth the following day, which isn't far from London. Not much more than an hour and a half, I think, from Victoria. So I stayed the night at my cousin's in London. She was in hospital having a baby at Hammersmith Hospital. So I went to Joe's, which was her husband's in Hammersmith, and he took me to see my cousin Dot and the baby, and then he went back to his little club, took me with him, and the following day I went back, caught the train down to Petworth, met my wife, and we travelled up to, well, it wasn't my wife then, it was, and we travelled up to back home. We got off at York. We got off to visit, to have a look at York, which we shouldn't have done, and a wander around York, and spent the whole day travelling up, and we got up here about 5:30 at night to Barnet Castle, or something like that. My mother, she knew we were coming. She'd been to meet, with the whole family, had been to every train to meet me. And I felt terrible that I didn't... I was 21 by this. You don't realise how you can hurt people by not thinking. Had I known that they were going to be waiting for me, which I should have known anyway, but they were all at the station waiting for me, all my brothers and sisters and my mother and father. I think he was out of the army by this time. Yes, he was. And stepfather, of course. And then we spent 7 days leave here, and I'd been a fireman before I joined the army, and so I went back to the station and missed the train, and there was a fire engine there for some reason or other, and I said, friends of mine, I said, I've missed the train, jump in. And we jumped in the back of the fire engine, and they took us, galloped us straight through to Darlington. And it was such a rough ride that my wife was sick on the back of the fire engine. However, my girlfriend, I should say, so we caught the train back down to London. This is rather an interesting piece, this. Pornographic, the next piece. And we got back down to London, and when we got to Liverpool Street Station, where I was due to catch my train down to Harwich to catch my boat, which was 303 was my sailing number. There was a big board saying that 303, same size as a rifle bullet, was cancelled for 24 hours. I'd missed seeing it at Darlington. I could have had another 24 hours at home, but it didn't matter. So then we went, what were we going to do now? We were stuck in London for the night until the following day. We had time to we had money in our pocket, and we had time to spare, but where were we going to spend the night? So we decided we'd go to a little hotel and spend the night as man and wife, which was not as man and wife. We weren't up to those sort of tricks. We didn't know what man and wife did, but we wanted to be together. We didn't want to part. So eventually, with much shame, we bought a little old ring. And we went to this little hotel in terrible shame, and nearly called it off at the door, you know, these sort of things. Terrible embarrassment to both of us. And this lady looked us up and down and said, all right. Well, we went to bed, but we didn't take our clothes off. We just wanted to be together. So we slept together, and it went terrible. When we went down to breakfast in the morning, it went dreadful. And then we went back to in the afternoon to catch the train, whatever time we had to be, to catch the night sailing.
Did you settle reasonably well into the brief little bit of civilian life you were having?
Oh, yes. It was marvellous. It was marvellous. It was absolutely marvellous. The only thing that was wrong was I couldn't stand the windows shut at night in the bedroom. I also remember I had to have the windows open. I felt choked in and the beds were soft. I couldn't sleep very well. But
what was the attitude of your friends and people that you knew in Barnet Castle?
Well, they were all very, very pleased to see me. All very pleased to see me.
They'd all be feeling, no doubt, that the war was just about over.
Yes. Well, I didn't go and meet many of them. But I do remember, this was on the next leave.
You got to Harwich, you're saying?
But anyway, she went to Liverpool Street with me. Then she had to get back to Victoria. She was only 17. She had to get back to Victoria and then back down to Petworth that night. So I got back to Harwich, caught me night crossing, which was all night, Hook of Holland, felt dreadful. I felt as if the end of the world had come. I was going back into the line, didn't know how long the war was going to be. And then we travelled up to terrible journey back up to on train journey, very slow and very cold. There was no heating on the trains, very slow, just wooden seats in those times. So half the windows were boarded up. Dreadful.
Is it all highly organised, this? I mean, you're moving from station to station.
Highly organised. It's a troop train.
And are you given, as you say, 303, you're given a number, are you?
The 303 was the sailing number.
And that's given to you when? When you set out?
That was when you were coming home. That was you were sailing you, for going
and
back.
And you stick with that number,
yes,
all the way through?
Yes. And we were going up to somewhere we went to, and it was the second ARU, Army Receiving Unit, run by a little Irish Sergeant Major, I think, and it was all tents in a field.
So where was this?
This was somewhere, I can't remember where it was. It wasn't back at the regiment. Somewhere pretty well up, and we got to this field, I think it must have been in Germany, and we got the second ARU and they said right, get into a tent, and within 2 hours the loudspeaker went, report to this, you put your pay book in, and in 2 hours you were back, picked your pay book and off again on a truck, and they took us up to the Forward Delivery Squadron, the FDS. That was the regimental forward that fed the regiments. So I was there, and it was in a tram yard in Bremen, a tram where there were all the trams. We slept in the trams, and there was tanks in the yard as well, new tanks, brand new tanks. The one I got in was a tank I'd never driven before, a Sherman. But even some of the lads I've talked to since had never seen one. Hydromatic gearbox, no gear stick. It was a sort of a pre-selector thing. It changed itself. Apparently they were no good. Apparently some came, but they weren't. You couldn't change gear yet. And you like to know that you're beginning, especially if you're going down a steep hill with 30 ton behind you. So I didn't know how to drive it. I just, when in doubt, rev up, which I did, and off it went. Because there were a lot of young boys there from England, from the training regiments, and I was an old sweat. I knew everything. So you couldn't ask them what how to do. And I was there for a while, not long, maybe a day or something. And then I was, because I had my Blackberry, I could have gone to any of the three regiments, the 3rd and 18th, EIY, or the 470 Gun Guards, but because I had me, this lad had said, keep hold of your berry, Geordie. I had me berry and I had me cap badge. I got back to my own regiment.
The young lads you said that that were at this unit, very young were they?
Very young.
Indications that they were really scraping the barrel now amongst these.
About 18, 19 maybe. They only looked very young.
Keen now?
Oh, very keen, yes. They come straight from training regiment. The kid is, sort of, and they were lucky. They never managed to get in. They didn't think they were lucky. They wanted to get in, you know, same as we did.
But what date was this?
This is about the... about the first week in May. There was about... how many... It was about 27th or 28th of April, I think, if I remember rightly. And when I got back to the regiment, and they were at a place out just outside Bremen. They weren't far away. Went up by truck. Bremervord, a place called Bremervord, near Bremen. And that was where the war ended. There we were just there, and we weren't there very long. Before, when the war was over, we were just sort of static there. The war was over. They'd been mopping up in Bremen, the regiment, and pulled them out to Bremervord, and then we all moved.
How were you received, and were your old friends still there?
9 o'clock at night it was, and they were still there. Yeah, I'm bloody glad you're back, this officer said. But I didn't get back with Carmichael anymore. A chap called Jones, but I didn't. It was a chap I didn't know, because he'd already got his own.
Had they lost many people since you?
They'd lost a hell of a lot. Yes. A lot of my friends had been killed at Gok. I told you that they were going to bring the regimental band out, and they were going to have a rest, and I think this was probably to calm us down and to give us a little bit of decent sort of, you know. They brought the band out. This was after I'd gone to hospital, and the first jets that the Germans ever had came over. And I think they killed about 28. They were just had the tea when they came over, and I think straight away the band were more or less sent back, from what I can gather, frightened to death. But that, I think, to me that was a mistake. But they must have known what they were doing.
Bremen, when you got there, what was it like?
Go to Bremen. Thank God you're back. They were just. It was all over by the shouting, and there was nothing much happening. A lot of drinking going off, and hilarity, and then we were all moved down to Hanover. That we were in the American sector then. What was going to be the American sector? I can't remember doing much there.
Did you see many civilians at this time? Were you seeing the Germans about?
Oh yes, lot of civilians at this particular time.
How were they reacting to the situation?
We weren't allowed to speak to them. They just treated us like strangers, which we were. They just there was no smiles or anything like that. They were all very aloof and sort of kept them out of our way. We were the great heroes then, of course. We had our chests sticking right away out here. We'd just won a war. There was no holding us back then. We were king of the castle. It was a marvellous feeling. It was a marvellous, tremendous feeling. To have come through it alive, tremendous.
Were these civilians in a pretty bad way, though, I'm thinking, in terms of...
They hadn't much to eat at all. They had nothing.
Clothing, heating and so forth.
They hadn't very much to eat at all. They were pretty well starving. Then we went down to... Hanover, and we were going to be, all our tanks had to be painted. Now this is an instance where I can't think whether it happened straight away, but we used to get to a troop of tanks. We got 30 prisoners of war from a cage that was just outside Hanover, and So they brought these 30 prisoners in the back of a three tonner, and we got six to a tank. And they had to be painted battleship grey, and all the wheelstones had to be painted white, and where the jerry can had to be painted, where the jerry can was held on, the straps had to be painted white. There was red, it was all done up and tittled up, and the end of the gun barrel had to be polished up, and it was all painted beautiful. And these six prisoners that we had were absolutely marvellous lads. So when it came to lunch, we had a pub. We'd taken over Herron House and Brewery, and we had a pub at the, with a little few trees about, and a little sort of a place, a little lane up to the road, and opposite was a little pub. Well, one cigarette on the black market was 10 pennies. So 10 cigarettes was a mark. So 100 cigarettes was 10 marks. The beers were 100 beers was 10 marks. That was the price of one cigarette. So for one cigarette you get 100 beers. 10 cents a glass. 10 pennies a glass. So we'd go in the pub and say, fill the tables up, and throw a couple of fags on the table. And we took the German lads in with us, of course, and they got sat down and getting a drink. And then we'd go round into the lunchtime, we'd go and have our dinner, and this big cook, he was from Lancashire, I can't remember his name, he said, "Can them lads cook?" I said, "Well, I think so." Well, he said, "Here, get them," and he gave them one of them little stoves that you pump up, and a bucket, and some tins of M&B, because they'd only brought two slices of bread, with some black bread, hard as, terrible stuff, dry bread, with a bit of sausage in, or something, and he gave them some tins to open, and they got put in the bucket, and they got stuck into this M&B. They thought it was marvellous, and there was an old German pianist. We were eating in a hall, a little room, large room. We all sat in this large room at tables. At the top of the room was a piano, and a blind man came, an old blind man, and we'd lead him up the thing and to the piano, and he'd sit down, and he played all these beautiful German waltzes, beautiful piano player, and then we give him the cooks gave him his dinner. And he came every day, every meal time he came and played for us for something to eat. Lovely old man. This was the attitude at the end of the war. I don't think there was any attitude, any hatred towards the civilians, because we had civilians in the street. And in fact, next door to me, we were in big houses. There were big houses with lots of stories. I was in the ground floor. There was a piano in my room. There was three of us, slept side by side. I'm in the middle between two Irishmen, Southern Ireland and Northern Ireland. You can tell Catholics and Protestants. And I'm the rose between two thorns. We had a big Welsh dresser in that side and a piano at this side, and a bathroom across the hall with no hot water, because the gas wasn't turned on. Then it came on suddenly. And anyway, That's where we were, in Palm Street, in Herrenhausen, in number 4 Palm Street, or Palmstrasse. And the girl next door lived up pretty well top, had irons on her, she had irons on her leg. She was a girl about 16 or 17. We weren't allowed to fraternise with these German people. We weren't allowed to speak to them. And yet squadron office was on the other side of the road, squadron office. And yet we pulled up and took that girl, carried her down the stairs in a wheelchair and put her in the back of a three-tonner and some more of them, and we took them out into Herrenhausen Park and got these big black army thermos flasks full of ice cream, and we give all the kids these ice cream and that. There wasn't a thing said, you know. We weren't supposed to fraternise. It was a court-martial offence, but there was nothing said. There was nobody ever court-martialed, and we did talk to them. And the mother was pleased as punch that we were taking her out. And she wasn't a nice girl. She was ill and crank, as the Germans say. And she was cranky. She was a bit of a... But it was understandable.
Was there an attitude with them that they weren't Nazis, they were, the Nazis were always someone else?
Oh yes, they have said that. We had nothing to do with the war. We weren't Nazis. In fact, there wasn't any Nazis in Germany. There can't have been, because they all emphatically denied that they were Nazis or had anything to do. It's a load of rubbish, of course. When I look at the excitement at the Nuremberg, when all the young kids were marching, had that been in England, it was, they had to join. I mean, those marches that those Germans played would make a man with a wooden leg step out. They were so exciting that the kids would flock to it. In fact, a lot of kids in Holland and France did. They joined the for a uniform and the excitement. And a lot went to the Eastern Front and were killed as well.
How long were you in this particular place?
In Hanover. We got there in May. Now, when we first got there, we had to guard every installation, petrol installation. We came off one onto another. My first one, where I took over from the Americans, was a big college, technical college. It had a wind tunnel and things like that. And the two Americans were sitting on a wall when we pulled up with this 1500 weight. Six of us jumped out in this order, you know, very smart order, rifles, to do a bit of Buckingham Palace guard up and down from his corner. So two of us would jump out, old guard, new guard. They just sat on the wall chewing gum with the inevitable little cigar stub and the stubble in overalls. And we highly polished boots and spibbed up blackberries, and we did the up from one corner. We did 20 paces and back up and big and back up again. And they said, "See you, fellas," and they just strolled off somewhere. I don't know where they went to. They strolled off, and we did that. That was the first one. It we didn't keep it up, and the girls and people used to come and watch us. I met a girl there. Two of them came. One was called, I forget, but she lived in, I'll think of it, I'll tell you it in a minute. And Gisela Beckmann, Holtenhofstrasse 30. Her name was Gisela Beckmann, and she lived in Holtenhof Street 30 in Herrenhausen. And I went out with her for quite a while I was there. Very, very pretty girl. Nothing happened.
Did young girls like that, they didn't suffer at the hands of the rest of the civilians because they were...
No, not a bit. Not a bit, because I would give her a cigarette. She'd say, "Well, I can't smoke it in the street, or I can't smoke it in public. I'll smoke it after." But, of course, that went home for a father, or to be sold on the black market. Don't forget, a cigarette was 10 marks, and the average German wage at that time was 30, and that was for cleaning bricks. There were all the Germans were working cleaning bricks from the rubble in preparation for rebuilding. 30 marks a week. That was the three cigarettes a week. So if a girl could get a couple of fags in the evening off the boyfriend, they were just more or less like little prostitutes.
And did you give them food as well? Was this a...
I was in Berlin for a while after that, but food. Now, if you went to the Red Shield, we had a big Red Shield club in Hanover, I remember, and we could take these big black thermos and get them filled up with ice cream. And I also got from the brewery a little small bottle of beer, and we had a bit of a party in Herrenhausen Park. That's the sort of things we did, you know. We had our regimental sports while we were at Hanover. This frat ban was on from May till August. We weren't allowed to talk to them until August. So you couldn't really give them any, you couldn't take them to the sports or things. I think the sports were about July. But we used to take them cakes and things. Very difficult. It was very difficult to give them anything. You couldn't give them anything in public. You weren't allowed to give them anything, but you couldn't see them starve. We're all young together, really.
Where were they living amongst this rubble?
Well, It wasn't all rubble. A lot of Hanover was rubble, but Herrenhausen was part of Hanover, and it was practically untouched. The flats, the street we lived in, hadn't had a bomb on it. Regimental office had one, and we lived opposite the whole thing, and I'd managed to acquire somehow a radio. And the lad said, "Can we run a speaker from the radio?" I said, "Yes." So they took it upstairs to the next window. And eventually my radio got quieter and quieter until in the end I couldn't hear it. And when I took the speaker wire out, it come full bore. And when I went upstairs, every room in that place had a speaker. And they were running them off my radio. So I had to put a stop to that, but I couldn't hear it.
But the army must, as you suggest, the army must have taken over the good rooms, the good houses.
Oh, yes.
What had happened to those civilians?
Well, where this Gisela Beckman lived, it was like one of these flats you see in Glasgow. You know the big concrete monstrosities? They lived in a place like that with a lot of it was missing, a lot of it was boarded up. When you see Berlin from the air, it looks as if there's nothing there, but there was quite a lot in Berlin. Now, this was Hanover, and there was quite a lot that hadn't been bombed.
Presumably those Germans had moved in with others.
Yes. Cellars, of course, places like that.
But condition of the children, and you get to meet children, I mean, troops and children tend to get on well together, don't they?
Oh, yes. Whenever you saw children, whatever nationality, we always had our chocolate and sweet ration, and they always got. We never touched them. I don't know of any soldiers that would stand eating the chocolate while there was kids floating about. Or they always saved them for the kids. When the kids chocolate for a cigarette for Papa was always cigarette, soap, Zyfer for Mutti, and chocolate for me. And she always gave them the chocolate and the little. We got I think five. Five sugared sweets a day, you know, the little wrapped up in paper, those little hard sweets. Five of those a day, seven cigarettes, two bars of chocolate. This was our ration every day while we were in action. Plus you got your naffy ration as well, buy your 50 tins, for very cheap. But you always kept your your sweet ration and your chocolate for any kids that came by. In fact, the one thing, I think they used to wonder whether the tanks carried more confectionery than ammunition, because there was. I saw one cartoon where there was a great big pile of sweets. The sweets were coming out of the gun barrel, and there was a big pile of sweets, and the kids' arms and legs were sticking out from the top, and it said on the bottom, we wonder whether the tanks carried more confectionery than ammunition. And another cartoon was where the big ones were sharing the tomato crop with the Tommies, and there was tomatoes everywhere. After the war, there were very, very happy days. The weather was good, it was summertime, and we had our regimental sports. We had a lot of, but before that, one of the most terrible things happened. We got the tanks, and then we got rid of them. The tanks had to be got rid of. We didn't need them, and they were taken onto a motorway spur and left there, and we came away. So the regiment were issued with armoured cars. I said, I don't want armoured cars. I'm a tank man. So I got a transport. I've got one of three sort of tank trucks made into buses, and that's what I got.